This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to the after show.
Little
round of applause.
What do we do?
Biggest month ever, bro.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Did not look before.
What do we do? Yeah, we did a lot of things. We launched Project Strong last week. We had closed out June with the biggest month ever on the Mind Muscle Project. About a couple thousand downloads, over 200,000, which is incredible. And yeah, guys, it absolutely warms our soul that you support us and you keep listening to us. And every time you send a message and you give us feedback and you share it and you write something nice on the post, like, it makes my day. Mm. Like, it honestly makes my day. So thank you so much for the feedback you give us and the shares that you give us and, yeah, just giving us your time each week to share some knowledge with you. And yeah, we're on a great journey here, so we're super excited. For anyone on Project Strong, we hope you're really enjoying it at the moment. Obviously, I think it's second week of the cycle now. Depending on when you started, you might still be in the first week of the cycle. But yeah, some good feedback going then. Over most of the little hiccups, anyone that has hiccups sort of emailing in, we're getting it sorted. But I think people are really enjoying it so far. Yeah, it's solving a lot of problems that people have.
It's strong season in Australia.
So one thing I wanted to discuss with you about. So last week, during COVID, this actually came up. I can't remember how much I discussed it, but so during COVID, I decided, right, I'm going to bring my calories down. My expenditure is going down. I don't want to put any body excess body fat on. And, you know, it's all relative, right? So, you know, some people would look at me and go, dude, like you don't have any body fat, but you know, I know, and I can tell, and I just want to manipulate what I can manipulate. And so I decided, okay, COVID, reduce it. Don't want to put any body fat. Actually try and lose weight, try and get a bit leaner. Let's see if this is possible. And just kind of took a kind of relaxed approach to it, reduced my carb portion. I think talked about this a bit, you know, took out a piece of toast, took out the rice for dinner, just ate vegetables instead, but nothing happened. So essentially I worked out around 200 calories. So it's roughly about 10% of my daily intake, or even a bit less if my daily intake is around like 2,500. So a bit under 10% of my daily intake. And we spoke to Sohee Lee about maintenance. And what I realized speaking to her is, and she kind of walked me through this, is that maintenance is like a window, right? And if you don't jump out of the window far enough, then you actually just bring your whole maintenance kind of threshold down. And that's what I did. I just kept bringing my maintenance threshold down. So I was lowering my calories, but it wasn't by enough. And my body was slowly adapting to a slower metabolism, which means less NEAT, less energy, less brain function, not training as well, that sort of stuff. And that wasn't really happening yet, but I was on that path. I was on that trajectory. So I actually decided, after speaking to her and after reviewing some of the podcasts and speaking to and listening to Luke Tulloch, who we had on the podcast, I took a more aggressive jump this time. So I built calories back up. And then when gyms reopened, got onto some heavy weights more, and then took a much bigger cut initially to shock the body a bit more, which I haven't actually done before. So I took out 20%. So I took out around 500 calories. And this is the first week of going through it. And I'll tell you what, it is dramatically different to what I expected. I mean, really, I've had a few attempts at sort of this fat loss and had sort of moderate results, but I have actually noticed, I feel like now, okay, you are legitimately cutting weight. And I'll tell you what the big differences are. And now I can really start to appreciate this. And you know, someone asked me, oh, why are you doing this? Like, why are you actually losing weight? You know, good level of body fat and, you know, strong and functioning well. Like, why would you actually do this? And I thought, you know, this is really just self-experimentation and challenge. This is part of the reason I fell in love with fitness, is because you are just this ongoing self-experiment that you can always try and test these things. So now that I've significantly reduced my calories, and how I did that was I basically just took breakfast out. Mm. So I still have, I replaced it with like a green shake, which is really a light on calories, just protein and vegetables. And a little bit of like avocado and stuff in there. Couldn't be more than like 300 calories, rather than, you know, two pieces of toast, butter, you know, three eggs, mushrooms, all that sort of stuff. So I took that out. And then I've also reduced my portion sizes for lunch and dinner. So really I'm only sitting down and having a meal twice. And the big difference is you are actually thinking about food more because you're hungry. Like, I'm actually hungry a lot of the day. Whereas I would almost never be hungry in a calorie maintenance or surplus. And so you never thought about food. And what's interesting is you actually have to consciously add and subtract in your head sort of at each meal if it hasn't gone exactly to the norm. Because you kind of base your nutrition. Okay, this is the most common day. Everything kind of works around this, you know, give or take. And so if I just stick to this day, I know I've hit it on the money, which is pretty much for me, the framework is like one protein shake, one protein bar, the shake in the morning, lunch and dinner. And then if I just stick to that, then I'll be in the deficit I need to be for now before I reduce any more. But yeah, and then when you kind of go off that, like this morning I ordered coffee and she's like, yeah, the usual. I'm like, yeah, the usual. And the usual comes out with breakfast. And I'm like, well, fuck, she brought out breakfast. Oh, I'm paying for it. So I have to eat it and I had to kind of add it up and think, okay, now I have to lose that other places. It also made me think this is the importance of nutrition education over a meal plan, is that if you were just on a meal plan, you just go, oh, no, I can't eat that. And you would just, the food would go to waste. Yeah, that's off the plan. I can't do it. I'm on the plan. Instead, I'm just like, all right, cool. I'm eating roughly 300-400 calories here. Now I need to lose that somewhere else in the day to stand it. So it might be like, all right, for dinner, like you're having a couple pieces of chicken and a stalk of broccoli or whatever it is, right? So I felt like that's where nutrition education is so powerful and understanding is so powerful, is like when you can make those flexible decisions like that. But yeah, the overall thing is I've been thinking about food way more. I'm definitely more hungry, I've noticed. And I'm like every morning I'll step on the scale, weigh myself, same conditions, everything, and I'm down a kilo and a half already. So it actually has made a difference. It's only been 1 week.
There was like some bodybuilder a long time ago, and there's some truth. He's like, if you're bulking, you need to be full and you need to notice that. And if you're cutting, you need to be hungry
and you need to notice it. Hey, it's not a bad intuitive way to do it.
It is true though, because often I think, yeah, if you're just not pushing it enough, like if you're not full quite often in the day, it's very unlikely you're going to be gaining weight.
Yep.
And if you're not hungry quite often, yeah, it's like pretty unlikely you're going to lose weight. Yep. That's often, I've had that discussion with clients. Just like, man, like a bit hungry. It's like, yeah, like, you know, that is part of the process.
Yeah.
Like getting a little bit sore.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is part of it.
Yeah. And I never fully appreciated that, because I never put myself in that place, because I was like, no, I don't want to like, I don't want to make this too hard. Like, yeah. I want to just like slowly reduce these calories. But no, they're, you actually have to, at least in this initial phase, like you have to lower your calories. And I noticed as well, like, hey, there's not as much energy and resources to train hard. Yeah. Like you kind of, the sessions don't last as long or whatever. And you're not as strong, but you got to keep up all the training. You got to keep up all the strength work. That's so important to preserve the muscle mass, so it just doesn't all fall off you. And yeah, obviously keep the protein high. So that it's been psychologically, it's been really interesting. I have not thought about food as much as I have in recent years. And it has almost made me appreciate how much easier life is if you do a meal prep for this. Because I'm just kind of fly off the cuff a little bit. Like dinner's controlled and breakfast is controlled. But yeah, sort of in the middle of the day, I can appreciate how that extra preparation of Sunday meal prep or delivered food or whatever can help dramatically. Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah, huge difference.
We're going to go from one extreme now to the other. So we have a unpaid product review, which we haven't had for a very long time.
Not a long, long time. And I'd say there's heaps of listeners listening right now who are thinking to themselves, what is an unpaid product review?
So what it was back in the day was we would just try random stuff that we found, usually like something to do with the gym or something to do with fitness. Very often we just didn't like it and we would shred it on the show. But occasionally we actually would like it. Like I think we did an unpaid product review of Wattify and then they reached out and became a sponsor.
Yeah, that's how we chose to keep the segment. We're like, hey, this got us a real partnership. But the thing why we did it is because we felt like there were so many products that would come into the fitness space, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, so many new things, people asking our opinions on them. And we didn't want to give an opinion that wasn't honest. And I mean, you can always say you're honest, but when it's literally unpaid, we can just be as, you know, honest as possible. And with Wattify, we weren't particularly kind and they still reached out and they were like, hey, we appreciated the honesty. We're improving it, but we'd love to partner with you. And so I thought that was good. I'm like, you know what? I think brands more than anything, they appreciate honesty. Like more than just like, hey, I'll sell your product and smile next to it, but no way I'm going to eat that. No way I'm going to wear that. And so that's why it's like for us, our integrity, we've always wanted to partner with people that we've used first. That's kind of really the only way of doing it.
Like yes.
Your nose is whistling hard.
Sorry.
For the listeners out there.
Okay. So this week we have high calorie growth cookies. So it is called, it's really thegrowth.com.au. Came across this on an Instagram ad.
They hit you with an Instagram ad. That's how you found it.
Hit me with an ad. And then okay. I DM'd him and I was like,
what was the ad? Was it just like someone eating a cookie?
It's
just
like a picture of a massive cookie.
I was like,
you know, I saw it and I was like, oh, it's probably like a diet cookie. Because normally this stuff is a diet cookie, right?
Yeah, it's low calorie.
And this one is like high calories. And I was like, what? So that's got my attention. So they sent us two boxes. So it's $49.95. So it's like $50 for a box.
Yeah, there's like, what, 10, 12 cookies 12, in a box?
12 cookies. Big cookies. We got
big, but not
huge in not surface
crazy
area.
You could easily pump 3 or 4 of them.
Oh, very questionable. I have basically got through just over 1.5 before doing this. So I had one of the chalk macadamia ones.
It's like the size of a 1.25 kilo fractional plate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And a snickerdoodle. And they also have a cookie triple chalk chunk, which I'm filthy that they did not send, which you definitely should have if you wanted a better review. And they have like a plant-based one as well.
Oh, really?
And they also seem to do like a drink, like a high-calorie drink, like a blackcurrant drink. We have not tried. So we are going to, like a mass gainer. So we're just going to review the cookies today. So 511 calories in a cookie.
Yep.
Which is a lot.
That's a lot.
23 grams of protein in a cookie. They said on the pack that half a cookie is a serving, but no one in their right mind would have half a cookie, which I've proven.
Yeah.
So, twice. A few different avenues here.
No, you didn't read the rest of the macros off.
And then, sorry. And
then another 20 grams of fat. 20 grams of protein, 20 grams of fat, 40 grams of carbs.
So, you got this. Yeah, there's 23 grams of protein, 22 of fat, and 50 grams. 52 grams of carbs.
Yeah.
22 of that is sugar.
So it's a bulking food. Like, look.
Yes, it is for bulking.
You are not going to be able to eat those consistently. Well, you could, but you'd really tremendously have to limit your fats the rest of the day. Like, if you're a girl trying to cut weight, for example, a smaller girl around 50 kilos, and you eat one of those, you're chipping in heavily into your daily macros. So, I don't think it
would work. I think for any guy that's looking to gain weight over, like, 80 kilos, it can work.
Yeah, yeah. It's just sure. Easy calories.
Easy. And the ingredients are pretty solid. So it's got just some really good quality carbohydrates in there, some pretty decent quality protein. So it is okay. First thought, I was like, I could just get a cookie from Woolworths. They are high calories, right?
Yeah,
and it tastes fine, or a good quality cookie online. But the type of carbohydrates they use are way better. It is higher in protein than one of those types of cookies, and it's slightly lower in just like refined sugar than one of those cookies.
So it's like $4 a cookie, roughly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's about, $4 for about 20 grams of protein. That's what I always look at. I'm like, all right, how much is this costing me for protein? Which is, here's the thing.
I mean, it's about the same price as a protein bar, and it's probably got similar protein, but obviously it's bulking, so it's got probably like three times the calories.
Yeah, look, put it this way. It was fucking delicious. And I think that's the most important thing. The most important thing is that if people are going to keep returning to eating your products, that's why we love Quest bars, because they taste like candy. They're so good. And then the second thing you obviously look at is like, all right, what am I getting from this? What are the macros? Blah, blah, blah. And like, look, this thing has really good ingredients. So that's obviously a bonus, not full of all that shit that other companies use. If that was on the shelf, if I was in a bulking phase and that was on the shelf on an Easy Mart or a 7-Eleven or whatever, I would have a hard time not buying one on a regular basis for $4 or whatever, just under $5. So I don't know what that speaks, if that speaks volumes to you or it doesn't speak about anything. But it's a good product. It's definitely a good product.
Yeah, I think though it is exclusively for people that are looking to gain weight.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch it if I was in maintenance. I definitely wouldn't touch it if I was in the phase I'm in now, which is why I had a slice of the cookie and you had the whole thing.
Yes, yes. And, then a bit of the next one.
All right, so I wouldn't be able wouldn't be right if we didn't finish it with an out of five.
I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5. Like, I'll definitely get through this box. And if I'm training, if I was doing like 2 sessions a day, I think this would just be sick in my bag. Right? Like, probably better than a Quest bar in a lot of ways, because it is just way higher. And like, you want carbs and that type of thing. My only drawback would say, I think for something that's meant to be very high calories, I expected it to be out of this world tasting good.
Yeah.
I was like, you are like adding calories. So it's not a diet. It's not like a Quest bar.
Yeah.
That's a diet food. This is a weight gain food. This should be like the best cookie I've had. And it wasn't the best cookie I've had.
Yeah.
So it was good. Yeah. So
if one cookie was 1,000 calories and it was like a similar-ish size and it tasted better, you would be like 4.5, 5 out of 5. Like, you would be like, if it was like, fuck, this is one of the best cookies I've ever had. It's kind of small, and you're like, how does this thing have 1,000 calories? Like, if you're kind of shocked of how calorie dense it is.
Yeah, it's not that shocking.
No, it's like, it's pretty, it's basically just like any cookie, like any decent cookie you would get at a bakery.
With better ingredients and better macros.
Yeah, well, similar macros, just more protein, really. Yeah, so yeah, for me, it's a 3 out of 5. Just from the macros perspective and the size and what you're getting from it. But if you gave me double the calories, and you gave me, 35, 40 grams of protein
and
in
you
a cookie,
and
it was slightly bigger. Nah, fuck it. And then and it tastes good. My God, I would be done.
Okay.
Done. But yeah, it's not out of.
So if anyone has a similar type of product, you can just send it through. Just DM us on Instagram, and we will
consume
it. Product review.
I'll consume a fraction. Yeah. Raph will consume the rest.
We'll eat it, almost anything.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the other things, actually, we posted about this. This is so interesting, right? This is hilarious. We're going to do a full, proper review on it next week. If you're a male, maybe if you're a female as well, the females I've asked, no, but if you're a male, likely in Australia right now, in America, it's already happened. Anywhere else, it's probably already happened. You have been served ads on your Instagram from a company called Manscaped. And you might recognize the name of the clipper is called the Lawnmower 3.0, right? It's not officially, if you're listening to this and it's July 1st, it's not out for another 2 days. You cannot buy it. This company Manscaped, right? So self-confessed manscaper over here. I've always cared way too much about how my hair looks. I've always, you know, cut my underarm hairs, cut my pubes. For a while, I was cutting the legs hair until I didn't care. And just because I want everything neat and nice, just OCD like that. And look, self-confessed. I'm just being honest. This is just how I like things, right? This company was made for me in many ways. I mean, it was just like, it's all male genital grooming kit. So you can get your piece absolutely on point, right? So it's weird for us talking about it, but I know the fitness crowd really cares about this stuff. It's a crowd that cares about how they look. And so they care about, you know, their hair, and they care about cropping themselves appropriately. And this company has like incredible products. Anyway, we do have an amazing code for you guys. If you, we can't talk about it just yet and on the audio version because it's not actually live. But if you guys want to DM us right now, we'll store the DMs and we'll give you guys the code in 2 days when they officially launch it in Australia. You can get it right now to show you, but you'll get the old version. You want to get the new updated version. So you get it in 2 days if you're listening to this tomorrow. So just send us a DM if you're interested and we'll give you a code. It's actually a really good discount to get started with. But I tell you what, I was very pleasantly surprised with the quality of this product because I have used so many of these male grooming kits before, and this one definitely, I'll talk about the comparison next week, but I did a side
before
to side.
Before and after photo?
No, not a photo. I did a, like kind of a test in terms
with
of
like
the,
a regular clippers?
Yes, with smart. The regular clippers that I use. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, the company's Manscaped, if you haven't heard of it already. So
if you're prepping for a big summer and you get one of these high calorie cookies and you get Manscaped, you are ready to roll.
Yeah, you'll be smelling nice and you'll be nice and clean.
And you'll be jacked.
And look, for girls as well, I think you know, yeah, if you're a girlfriend listening to this and your man does not take care of or if you're a guy and your man doesn't take care of or any guy that you know that needs to take care of, you know, his business downstairs, needs to smell better, needs to groom better, this is
the one.
This is the one. Yeah, this will save your peace. It's going to save pieces around the world. All right. I'm pretty excited for it. All right. So before we jump into the listener questions, one of the things that I was mentioning before, the shake in the morning is part of my sort of weight loss staple. Been a staple of ours for a while.
Yeah.
Really, because I think with the problems we're facing, in 2020 is that we have so much good information and almost so much fear based around all the things that we need to be getting in, vitamins, minerals, probiotics, prebiotics. It kind of feels overwhelming sometimes. And we don't have time to consume all these things from Whole Foods. It's just a reality. If you do, you're either super rich and you've retired and you can spend all your time doing this stuff. Or you maybe get all the food delivered to you. But for most of us, we don't actually have access to all this stuff from Whole Foods on a regular basis. And it's frustrating because we're educated. We know we need these things, but we don't have the time to invest in getting all the nutrients that we need, which is why a company like Activated Nutrients is here to be like, I have the solution for you. They're better than traditional green powders and multivitamins because they have whole food vitamins and minerals as opposed to synthetic ones, which means you have better absorption, which just means the product you're paying for is actually going into your body. You're not just pissing it out. So if you guys are interested, activatednutrients.com. If you use the code OFFERMMP, that's offer, one word, MMP, offer MMP, one word, you will get 20% off any of your orders. So pick up the top-up product for men, women, for masters, athletes, for older athletes, and for kids, and you get 20% off.
Still worth taking care of yourself if you're a master. It's not all over.
100%. And manscaping.
All right. Listen to questions. Got three good ones. First one, Yancy Alyssa. Do you ever become too obsessed, should be obsessed, with your WIP scores, recovery/strain? I think that the answer is yes. I think for nearly everyone that gets the WHOOP, it's definitely a yes at some point. And then you have to go through like a withdrawal period and then you
find a right balance.
And then you rebound. For sure, you can. And then I think, I've tried all of it. You're like, don't look at it. Then you look at it. I never really became obsessed with the strain one. I know some guys at the gym like always bring out their phone and like always looking at the strain. I've just like never really cared that much. I like to look at it for workouts and see like where it was on a run and different stuff like that and compare different runs. But
I've like never been of the thought like I'm just gonna try and hit like 15s every day for a certain period. I don't know. I just never have got into that. I know other people seem to get obsessed with that. I got a bit obsessed when I was like sleeping was really interrupted. As a new dad, I was like really obsessed with like the recovery and the sleep scores and trying to get more.
Out of became
the
a dad.
More out of the limited time. So I guess I came a little bit there, but now I think I've like settled into a pretty good rhythm with it.
How much sleep are you getting at the moment?
So I get up at 2. So like the last, that's been like 4.5 hours, 5 hours. So I get up at 2 and then I try and like get another nap in after that. But I still get up
at what time? Like later in the day, like 3 p.m. or something?
Oh, no, I haven't napped since. I never napped during the day.
Oh, okay.
I'll try and like, you know, ideally get back to bed at like, you know, 4. And then the alarm goes off at like 5:30, but...
Oh, right. 4 a.m. Right, yeah. 4 a.m. You'll get up at 2, you'll do a bit of stuff, and you'll go back to sleep for a bit. Yes. Okay.
And then sometimes there's like one more interruption at like 12.
Yep.
But that's like shorter because I'm not actually doing the feeding.
Right.
So it's just like awake and I'm just like helping settle.
And you are doing the feeding at 2. You'll get up and give him a bottle and stuff.
Yeah, like okay. Snappy, give him a bottle.
So how many of those...
Watch some YouTube videos.
How many of those
introduce him to Joe Rogan.
How many of those do you have in between like the... when you go to bed and when your alarm goes off.
So the current routine is I'll hopefully get to bed at 9. Sometimes it gets later because like if he's not settling, I'll settle him so my partner can go to bed. And then he's meant to get up at, like 12. So okay. Like 3 hours later for a feed. And then I'll like wake up, but I don't really have much to do. And then I'll like, my alarm will go off at 2. So whether he gets up or not, I need to get up and make sure he gets, I can't, like not allowed to sleep in.
Yeah.
Because then he's like missing a feed. So I'll get him up and then, it just takes quite a long time. Like go like get the milk. I get it all ready the night before, obviously. But then like feed him. Takes like 20-30 minutes and like burp, hang out. He just doesn't want to go back to bed for a little bit.
Wants to chill with his dad.
Might do a massive shit. This is like usually what happened. His usual style is this. He'll be like, okay, change his nappy. Like haven't done a pee or a poo. Nothing. Perfect. As I'm taking off the nappy, starts peeing everywhere, right? All over me.
It's like, oh, finally. Yeah, I can release it.
Like, finally got this stupid thing off me. Finally time. He's like, okay, cool. Got the clean one on. Clean everything down. Perfect. Okay, now is a great time to do a shit.
So he'll separate it for you.
Yeah. And then change again. So anyway, that's where it's at. So I got a bit obsessed with it because of that whole period. But it's funny because people are always like, oh, you don't want to look at it because it'll get in your head for training. But the truth is it usually is a reverse effect for me. I'm like, oh, you know, interrupted sleep, my recovery is going to be horrific. Like, what's the point of going to the gym? Now I look, and it's like, it's often pretty decent.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, sweet. No excuse.
Yeah. I mean, I think I look at it the most for calorie burn because I'm doing weight loss at the moment. I want to make sure I'm burning enough calories because, like I said before, I use it as a judge of like how much I should be eating in a day, which I think is one of the best ways to do it to maintain your weight. I know most people are using it for performance and sleep and recovery and stuff. But I feel like I'm going to do that stuff regardless. I'll probably look at it sometimes if, well, I'm not feeling that great. I should check my recovery score. Oh, okay. It's actually, you know, high yellows. I can actually push a bit harder here. Or some days, you know, I'll go in. I'm like, man, definitely a red day. And I look at it and it's like, yeah, it's really red. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll take it a little bit easier. That's really how I adjust it with my training. But I'm like, I will never let it stop me from training because I train for so many other reasons, not just to, you know, lift more or whatever, you know, for the mental benefits and to break up the day and to just, you know, get the endorphin rush and feel good and just, you know, have a good rhythm going. But I'll tell you what, monitoring that calorie burn each day is, I think, you know, a huge difference. Wow, I still hear the whistle, bro. You're killing the listeners.
It's nuts.
Maybe go high and then point it down.
It's nuts the actual difference because I think like I'll train 2 days in the morning, so my training will be identical, but my calorie burn can be anywhere from like 2,000 to like 2,800, just depending on how active I am. I'm sitting at home
so much,
or like yesterday, like going around, going to the city, walking and stuff like that.
Yeah, like I think the difference is really quite shocking in how much, you know, most people think, oh, you know, it can't vary by more than like 300-400 calories a day. No, it can vary by like 1,000 calories, which is tremendous in the amount of food that you can eat. So I'll give you an example. All right, like yesterday we were we're on the move, walking around in the city all day, 2,651. And then the day before on Saturday, which was, or actually it was Sunday, but I'll go off the Saturday, which was a day where, I was moving around a fair bit. I would say similar amount of walking, similar amount of steps or whatever. Probably the only difference is I was just active a bit earlier, 2,900.
Mm.
So it's like, you know, you can vary quite a bit. And when you've got accurate data like that, you know, and there's nearly a 200-300 calorie difference, it should affect how you eat food and affect what you consume. You know?
Okay, Coach James Dorn, this is for you. How is Lockie going with the knees over toe program? Has it helped performance slash injury?
Yeah, good question. So, yeah, I have been doing it. I know I talked about it. It obviously is really popular. He got was on our podcast and people really enjoyed that.
So, just fill us in on what is the program.
Yeah, so basically following the full program in lockdown, I followed it pretty strictly for about 5 or 6 weeks. And now I've been just kind of integrating it into my normal training. But essentially, there's three types of days. And then within those 3 days, there are just progressions. And I've started at the absolute lowest regression in many regards, just because I still had pain. So I was trying to rehab it. But basically, there's a day which is like, he calls it like direct knee work. So you do like these specific exercises which directly focus on the knee. There's a second day, which is like a dynamic day where you do like more kind of like a sports performance. It's kind of like the sports day, if you think about it. If you were like a basketballer, you would do basketball drills and jumping drills. If you were a footballer, you would do some, you know, maybe dribbling drills and shooting drills or whatever. You would kind of do elements of your sport to kind of strengthen your knees. And then the third day is kind of like the accessory day where you do like the core work and you do like your Nordic curls, like hamstring curls. So you're supposed to do those 3 days twice a week. So you're supposed to have 2 direct knee work days, 2 sports days, and 2 accessory days. And I've kind of, at this point, I've only been going probably 3 to 4 days a week. But I'll try and do all the accessory. So there's kind of like this accessory stuff that he says, you know, you can just kind of do it all the time, every day, like calf raises and tibialis raises and reverse sled walks and stuff. So I try and always warm up with that stuff and just sprinkle it into my session. I have definitely been improving at most of the accessory exercises, pretty much all the accessory exercises, just because I hadn't really put tons of effort into them previously. So they were in a massive deficit. I brought them up quite quick. The direct knee work, it progresses, but then it'll hurt again. So I'll have to regress it. So it's really back and forth. And part of it is just like learning some of the movements. So sometimes I'm just literally getting stronger because I'm just getting better at the skill of the movement. But I hadn't been doing a lot of the sport days. So I hadn't been doing a lot of jumping and side to side stuff. So my knees were feeling really good. So I decided to play some basketball and I played for probably like 30, 40 minutes, like pretty decently hard, not crazy. It's just like 2-on-2. And the next day my knees were absolutely fucking destroyed. Like so bad, so, so bad. So from that perspective, it has not helped one bit. So look, I have gotten stronger at the exercises. So that I've definitely improved from that perspective. It obviously just hasn't translated over into any sports performance yet or any pain management yet. But it's I know that rebuilding tendons and tissues and serious injuries takes a long time. And so I'm not going to say it doesn't work because I know it does work for some people. And I was progressing in the movements and I was probably on a good path, but like all stupid people that think they're better, they go, it's just the same way that, you know, I feel like you're ready for heavy deadlifts again and you're doing all the accessory work, but you haven't really done any deadlifts.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, all right, cool. Let's just test where my max is at. Of course you're going to hurt yourself. Of course, if I just play hard on it without a warm up and without really building it up and doing many sports days, it's going to hurt. And I spoke about it with some people that I just sort of DM that are in sports and they're like, yeah, you just need to like slowly bring that dynamic work back in and you just went, you didn't go any and you just went 0 to 100. So, it was a little disheartening, but at the end of the day, I kind of deserved it and it wasn't shocking that that happened. I think it would have been shocking if the opposite happened. If I got into the sports day and I experienced no pain and I was bulletproof,
yeah.
I think that would have been more shocking. But look, I think if anything, it's good because it's not a miracle fix. And anything that's a miracle fix, you always need to be wary of, right? If it's, oh, it's too good to be true, it's often too good to be true. Like Ben Patrick has been working on his knee program for like a decade.
Yeah.
Like he has been doing this shit for a long time. That's why he can fucking jump off a huge, you know, a fucking balcony and land on one knee and just spring and dunk, like, because you've been doing it for a long time. So I want to get to his level, but I realize it's going to take years. And I'm willing to put the work in and just chip away at it. But the one thing I will say though is I did go for some runs during lockdown, and I definitely noticed my running was better and it was stronger, and I didn't experience any knee pain when I went for those runs.
Why do you think the running was better?
So like, you know, when I got my, running analyzed by Tim Branson, yeah. Running Lab, previous guest on the show, one of the issues I have with my running is I slap the ground too much with my foot when I get tired because, just my lower leg muscles are quite weak and doing so many calf raises and tibialis raises, I was able, under fatigue, and I was fatigued, I was able to maintain my running posture and a soft landing, and I felt really strong through like my shins and my calf, and that made a huge difference. Yeah, huge difference.
Yeah, and the shins definitely help.
Big difference, yeah.
Okay, last one. Grant Satterthwaite.
Asked the question last week.
How can someone tell if they're a beginner, intermediate, or advanced lifter?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I find that the people's or different coaches' answers to this always...
Wildly different.
Yeah, wildly, wildly.
Advanced is like someone lifts silver or gold medal only.
Yeah, honestly, I've heard people like, yeah, there's a world record powerlifter. And he's like...
But he's not advanced.
Yeah, he's not. I wouldn't call him advanced. I'm like, what the fuck is advanced then? Who is advanced?
It does become like a ridiculous dick measuring contest of when you will call someone advanced.
I think the more into like say powerlifting you are, like the more old school powerlifting coaches you go, the less likely they are to hand out the advanced badge to people. But I think from our experience and our definition, I really think advanced people, the way I like to categorize it, is they don't really... Okay, look, everyone can always benefit from more coaching. But if someone was to... go out on their own, they never need a coach again, they could make long-term progress by themselves. I would call that advanced. You advanced was, you know, technique, you know how to program for yourself, you know how your body responds, you have a good intuition about your body, you know how to heal yourself from different injuries, you know how to grow muscle, you know how to lose weight. That's someone advanced that has all the tools that they need to manipulate and change their body as they need. And I would say almost in some ways, you can earn the advanced badge honor in some ways by being a coach and having coached other clients, because you kind of learn so much from coaching other people that makes you more advanced. Like, for example, the reason I thought about this was because there are some people in the gyms that look advanced. They're really strong, they're jacked, they're shredded, they look great, but their knowledge is actually not that good. Like, they actually have only ever really programmed for themselves, and they've just followed someone else's program. And if you ask them to help you or program or how do I get strong or whatever, they don't really know.
Yeah.
They're kind of just guessing. So that person in some respects is not that advanced, and they're more intermediate, especially because they've only ever worked with a subject of themselves. Whereas, yeah, you can have people that, yeah, might not look as fit, might not be in as crazy shape, but they have been, but they've trained so many people that I would say they're more advanced, because really they have all the knowledge, the skills and the wisdom, that they just haven't applied it to themselves as much yet. But I guess it's kind of the perspective you're taking on advance. And then intermediate and beginner, I would say for me, just kind of regressions of that version. Beginner is really someone that's never stepped in the gym before.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. Like the vast majority of people do get lumped into intermediate.
Yeah.
And you definitely, I mean, in truth, you generally end up advanced in like some areas of your fitness and not in other areas.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
You know, often you might be advanced in like some lower body lifts because you did tons of it for your sport. But you're just not advanced in like all the other areas of fitness. So you can be like advanced, intermediate, and in often cases, beginner in different aspects of fitness all at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really good point. And I think that, you know, for people that are intermediate, well, I think, you actually still can go to the gym for a long time and still be a beginner. I think most people that are intermediate have had coaching. I think... you can go to the gym for 10 years, still be a beginner. It's because you've never had coaching. You've never.
Yeah, really I think you'll almost never get... It's a good question. Like, well, how do you level up? You almost never get to advanced without coaching.
Yeah. And I would argue that you don't really... most people don't get into intermediate unless they're really, really good at self-teaching themselves until they're advanced.
Yeah.
Until they get coaching.
You know, with the internet and stuff, you can self-teach yourself to like a very strong intermediate lifter.
Yeah.
But you generally find people have either got coaching or like some sort of training partner situation that results in coaching to get to advanced.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I hope that's helpful. It shouldn't matter too much. And I'm really on that as well. I know...
It matters in picking the right program. That's the thing. It's just like beginners on an advanced program...
especially online.
...really doesn't work.
Yeah. Like Project Strong is not for a beginner. If you've just started your kind of fitness journey, you're kind of just learning the lifts, you don't really know how to execute a squat yet, you've never really done a squat cycle before... you know, when I say, all right, we're going to do a, you know, stiff legged deadlift, you don't have no idea what that is, dumbbell row, no idea what that is, it's not going to work for you. It requires you to be a bit further along. Anyone that's at that level that can't follow Project Strong by themselves, like you need a coach, you need someone to teach you how to do things. And then once you have a lot of the movements down, it's great, because then you can go shopping, you can go and buy all kinds of programs and try them, because you have an idea of what's in them. You'll always learn stuff in new programs. Like I expect even advanced lifters will see stuff in our program and be like, oh wow, I've never used this before, I've never done this exercise before. But that's just going to happen a lot less. That should be like 20% of the program is stuff you haven't seen before, or less. But yeah, if it's like everything you're seeing is brand new, it's not, you're not ready to do the program yet. Yeah.
Okay, sick. So last thing today, we have a very interesting documentary we're going to review. So this is called Spelling Bee. It's on Netflix. It follows four hopeful competitors that are basically preparing for the National Spelling Bee, so the number one Spelling Bee competition in the US. I think it's up to 14 years of age, I want to say, the sport. But then as it follows these four people, it kind of just goes into this decade-long run of success that Indian Americans, so not Native Americans, like Indians that, I guess, traveled to America and then their children, really.
Yeah. You know what I find... you're going to finish there.
That's it, really. They've been successful for 10 years and it basically just looks into that as it follows these four hopefuls towards their finish.
Yeah, nice. And well, you know, it was interesting about the start of this documentary and I ended up talking over the whole thing because I was just having a long discussion about this with Ev. And we were saying, like, you know, I didn't realize that only 1% of the American population was Indian. I would have thought maybe it's potentially more. Obviously, just the size of India. And it kind of went over some of their immigration into Australia and how, you know, a lot of them ended up in certain fields, like being doctors and engineers and stuff, and how, you know, a lot of there were like doctors in some really kind of rural areas of America. And they said, why is an Indian being a doctor out in like Kansas, Missouri or something? And they're like, well, it's like the jobs that none of the white doctors wanted at the time. They wanted the big inner city jobs with higher paying and stuff. And the Indians would just kind of take whatever they want. But anyway, this part of the discussion I started having, and this is what we were talking about earlier, was with, you know, and you know, I don't want this to come off wrong, and I want to just tread carefully when I talk about this, because I know this people can get offended by this. And look, I know if you know, someone was, you know, Chinese talking about people from China, you know, I'm sure it would kind of rub me the wrong way if they weren't treading carefully with how they go about this. But essentially, I've always, you know... Generally, anyone I played against in sport who's Indian, generally really skinny, often pretty small, pretty weak, right? And I've never really met many Indian people or seen many Indian people that look anything like bodybuilders or powerlifters. And there's always exceptions and stuff, of course. But for how many they are, they've just never been physically, like genetically superior in terms of the physicality of you know, being tall and strong and well-muscled. Whereas if you look at like, say, you know, like a black guy, generally, because of their histories and their slavery and all this sort of stuff, you know, they're what in many ways you could say there's some selective breeding, or not selective breeding, but this is just kind of how it came about that they have amazing genetics. A lot of them have really, really good genetics because, you know, you had to be super resilient to survive those times and for those generations to carry through. And this is just kind of how it is. And I thought to myself, okay, is it because, is there a base level that, like, if you just took, you know, Indian genetics and you just measured it in a lab against, say, white genetics, black genetics, Asian genetics, Mexican genetics, whatever, do they actually build muscle slower? Do they have less potential for strength? Do they have less dense bones? All this sort of stuff. Like, is that actually a thing? Or is it just that we don't see that the culture is defining what the bodies look like in adulthood, which is low protein diet? They're not big in the strength sports. There are some Indian weightlifting, but you know, often smaller weight classes. There's bodybuilding's growing heaps in there, so it'd be interesting to see what happens in the next 20 to 30 years. But yeah, like rugby's not a big sport there. American football's not a big sport there. Baseball's not a big sport there. Like none of the power sports, athletics, not a huge sport there. None of the big power sports are like huge there. And obviously now there's more research and study coming out showing the generational epigenetics. So what that means is essentially if your parents lifted and they were strong and muscular and lean and fit, that has now been shown to have a genetic carryover into their offspring and their offspring's offspring. So if you look at like the Icelandic people, obviously they're brought up in one of the toughest climates in the world and they've got the Viking heritage and all that stuff. A lot of them have the epigenetics of, you know, Vikings in many ways. Why so many of them are so strong and so fit? Because they've come from that lineage. And so I wanted to see what would happen.
Isn't that just a genetic change because over a long period of time?
Well, yeah. So, yeah, I think that what's going to happen... I mean, it's an epigenetic thing as well because so many of them lift and so many of them are into those strength sports and stuff. So, they have the benefit of both. But it'd be interesting if a generation... Like what we're saying is it always takes like a... You know, for them it was like Sachin Tendulkar, right? It's like best Indian cricketer of all time. Sachin?
Sachin Tendulkar, yeah.
Yeah. But if they had like the Sachin Tendulkar of, I don't know, I guess powerlifting is not big enough, but I don't know, say like a guy that just crushing in CrossFit.
You know, probably, yeah, maybe even like a jacked UFC fighter or something.
Yeah.
Like a boxer, like a really big guy.
Right, yeah. Like a sport that you had to train weights for, yeah. That you had to be strong and big and aggressive for. I wonder if it would just, all of a sudden, there would just be heaps of jacked Indian people because the whole generations of kids are aspiring to be like that guy. Because they're all trying, aspiring to be cricket players, and it's a high-skill sport. You don't need heaps of muscle and strength and power to be good at cricket. It helps, but it's not essential. No. You know, so it'd be really interesting to see what happens there. And I think, honestly, that just genetically, then no one's inferior. I think anyone has potential to build muscle. And we proved that because we found that other sport. What was it that we're watching?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
really popular in India.
Okay, the sport. They've got like their own national sport.
It's like run at each other and just wrestle fuck each other.
No, it's like kill the dealer with the pill.
Yeah, it. Yeah.
But clearly they have epigenetics for spelling. So, yes. People that don't know, they have 1% of the population and they have won the odds of this is astronomically low. They have won every single year for 10 years running, which is absolutely nuts. And it follows this in the documentary. I mean, this is one where it just shows how important a role model is.
Mm.
Like, they just keep looking up at these role models that started winning and keep winning. I had no idea how competitive spelling was in America. It's like not in Australia.
Right.
It's like not really a thing, spelling bees in Australia. I looked it up, see if we could find one. They like just started, like it's really small one. It's like not a thing. In America, it is absolutely huge. And yeah, they have, it's quite interesting. Like that it's on ESPN. Like it is massive
huge.
When they get all the way to the national.
Yeah, it's their sport.
Yeah. And it's there was even this like boss guy who was like 14. He was like, I labeled him like the Conor McGregor of like, the Indian spelling. He was just like, he was like shit talking.
No, they called him the Michael Jordan.
Yeah, but he was more like Conor McGregor. He was like really overconfident and he was like, you know, often so they would like spell a word, right? And it's like C, it'd be like, you know, car, C-A-R, harder words than that. But he'd be like, car, C-A-R, boom, and just walk off, like drop the mic in the middle of it, everyone would go nuts. So it was like quite interesting and funny to watch. The only thing I did think though was like, thank God this sport ends at the age of like 14 and no one cares about it after. Because they study every single day for like 4 hours.
Oh, is there an age limit to it?
Yeah, like it's over once you get like into middle school or whatever.
Right.
So it's done. And then thankfully they all move on. Because if this continued, it is like the not a good lifestyle.
Right, right.
You know, it's not the best lifestyle. Or like, you know, spending your whole afternoon at home doing words from the dictionary.
Horrific.
And they almost know every single word.
Yeah, no, it's crazy.
I'm like... It's time to move on to something else.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Look, I thought it was fascinating, but yeah... To my earlier point about Indian genetics, well, I don't know what that sport is.
I don't get this.
I don't think that, honestly, the genetic predisposition for putting on tons of muscle and being super strong and stuff is that different across a whole population. Every population has exceptions. But I think between all the populations, I think everyone's pretty much starting at a similar place, right? So
the sport is kabaddi.
Kabaddi. And it's mad. Like, all those guys are jacked. All those guys are strong. So, I'm like, it's just how the culture is. It's how diets are. It's how...
No, not to the, no way, though, to the level of Africans.
No.
Like, Mike Tyson's not coming out of Mumbai.
No, but I'm saying, like if you took the averages of all the populations and all the ethnicities, right? You took, say, like, that average point, and then you looked at the average point over muscle building potential for power potential, strength, speed potential and stuff. Yes, okay, you can say maybe African genetics is, you know, 5% higher, but I'm not saying...
Like they're never going to be in the 100-meter final.
No, but...
Neither are white people.
No, but I mean, like, more across the average of the whole population might not be that different. Yes, maybe you will see higher in for power and speed for... Maybe it's 10%. For African people, but I'm sure if you ask the average person, they think Indian person, they think Mike Tyson, they go, bro, like worst genetics in the world. But I'm saying no, but Mike Tyson's not a representation of the average.
Yeah.
You know, they just don't have a Mike Tyson in India to prepare.
Sure.
But there, if they found a Mike Tyson in their population, which is obviously there was someone, there's a tip of the spear athlete in India like that, and they built him up to be one of the best boxers in the world. But it's just not in their culture boxing. They might have someone that's really close to Mike Tyson. And you might be like. Oh, okay, well, look, you know, like, yeah, Mike Tyson's better. Maybe he's got a 5% advantage here genetically, but, you know, they're kind of close. And I just think that a lot of people, just based off the cultures there, they just think that, oh, well, yeah, Indians, they can't build muscle and stuff. I'm like, well, they haven't really tried compared to the average person. So I think the averages is actually quite similar across all populations.
But the outliers are more different.
Yeah, well, no, I'm saying the outliers, you know, could be more of the same, but the just the general average of, say, Africans, they might be the best race for power, strength, and speed above all others, but not by as much as people think.
Well, that is the interesting thing, is that often you can look at, say, sprinting, and Africans are clearly the best at sprinting, but it doesn't necessarily mean that on average, they probably are, but it doesn't necessarily always mean that on average, they're better than another population on average.
That's what I'm saying.
What it means, though, is that they have more extreme outliers. Because what you're seeing in the 100-meter final is just the outliers, right? You just look at the tip of the spear. And sometimes, and often these things, why it's confusing is that one population will just have more extreme outliers than the other population. So then when you go to watch sport, you're exclusively watching outliers.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if like, two races all do a math test, they might average out exactly the same. So on average, like country one gets the same scores as country two. But if you go to the world championship in that test, it might be all from one country. Doesn't mean on average they do better.
Yeah.
It just means sometimes they have more extreme outliers. And that often happens with like men and women often as well. It's like, you know, men don't actually do better in maths than women, but they often have more extreme outliers in maths. So sometimes the tip of the spear in like those sort of careers, and then vice versa with women in other careers. They do similar on average, but they have more of the outliers in one type of career.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. I definitely agree. Like, I agree with what you're saying. I just think...
They have the outliers in spelling, that's for sure.
Yeah, but like, I think the averages is still higher, is what I'm saying. Like, I think if you took the average African guy off the street, the average Indian guy off the street, he'd probably win in a foot race. But I don't think it's as extreme as people might think it is, right? And then if you train them up, I think most people would be shocked at, wow, that Indian guy actually got really fast and really muscular and really powerful. And so did that African guy. And yeah, he's still faster, but I think that some people just think, well, because they just don't really have it in their culture at all. They just naturally assume they all suck, they're all weak, they're all skinny. No matter how hard they tried, they would just suck generally. It's it's not true at all.
Sports do make an enormous difference, because it's hard to imagine. You know, by the time someone's 18 in some countries, they've already played that sport for decades.
Decades,
It's already, you know, transformed their bodies. They've already eaten in a way that supports that sport, and they've been encouraged to eat in that way.
And the culture and the icons and, like, you know, the reason so many black kids play basketball is because they have LeBron James, they have Michael Jordan. If there was an Indian Michael Jordan, there would be so many kids that play basketball. So many Indian kids that play basketball. You know what I mean? And like, yeah, they might never make the NBA, but a shitload of them would be really good at basketball, you know?
Okay, so the sport is kabaddi. So if you want to see like a nutcase sport that you've never heard of, you can Google kabaddi. It's like one guy trying to get past 10.
Yeah.
Spelling Bee movie is good. If you want to really test yourself, which I did, was I would watch the movie and I would stop when they said the word. And I would try and spell it myself.
Okay.
Because what happens is you watch the movie, right? And they'll say a word and then you'll spell it in your head as they're spelling. You're like, yeah, that's obvious. That's how you spell that crazy word.
Yeah.
But if you actually stop it and try and spell it and then compare your answer to what they say, it is so hard. Oh my God.
Did you get any words right?
Almost none.
Like, did you write it down?
I wrote it down. Okay. And then I would...
It's an interactive documentary.
Interactive movie. Because I'd say the word, I'd stop it and then I'd try and spell it. Dude, it is nuts. I mean, I guess it's similar to, you know, me trying... If you tried weightlifting and you just walked up, okay, what are they lifting? 140? Okay, I've never weightlifted before. Let me give this snatch at 140 a go. That's like the type of success you have.
Yeah, yeah.
In this film. They are so good. Like, these kids are 12 and they're like, yeah, there's only a handful of words I'm not sure on in the dictionary.
Wow. That's crazy.
And most of the words at these spelling bees, I've never heard of the word. Never heard of it.
Do they have this? Do they all have like a standard dictionary? It's like, hey, everything you'll get in the spelling bee,
It's from one dictionary.
Okay, yeah. Because I was going to say, like, if everyone's using different dictionaries, you'd be like, dude, my dictionary doesn't have those words in it. You know what I mean? So, and I was reading the Urban Dictionary.
And it's such a ruthless sport because, you know, these kids have trained all year for it. And as soon as you spell one word wrong, you are out. So, they've gone like through the, you know, the town comp to the regional comp, like I think only one more like state and then nationals, one word and you're gone.
Dude, all right, question. Ziki, is he going in spelling bees?
He hasn't got the genetics for it. No, because I was spelling, he was with me and we both tried spelling the word. We could barely get a word right.
Fuck, that's hilarious.
He's gone.
All right, so what are you giving out of 5?
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. Not because I absolutely loved it, but because spelling is like so, I couldn't think of a more boring topic than spelling.
Yeah.
And it like got me all the way to the end and got me like pretty excited to see who would win.
And such an ancient skill now, spelling. It's like,
it's so redundant. I was like, Grammarly, you heard of this shit online? Like, fixes your spelling, guys?
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 3 out of 5. It wasn't for me. I think maybe if I made it more interactive.
It got a bit boring around 30-40% of the way through. So if you keep it interactive and keep pushing, it gets more exciting.
Keep pushing to a bad documentary.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right, guys. Last thing we'll leave you with. A lot of us move to an online programming model, but we're obviously there's not a lot of efficiency there. And I think anytime you have inefficiencies in your business, you are losing money. So if you're coaching people online, if you're delivering your program online, you need to be using TrueCoach. If you guys go to truecoach.co/MMP, what you'll find is a free trial for 2 weeks and you'll get a discount. Even if you just put one client in, what you'll find is how easy it is to drag and drop programs for clients. So all clients at Creature Fitness 2.0 are using TrueCoach now. So everyone's got a TrueCoach account. We customize their strength portion. So if you want to build your chest, shoulders, and arms, we're going to work on that. If you want to build your butt, we're going to give you a program for that. So we're dragging and dropping all these programs to customize that. And then we put the conditioning workout in Wattify. So it's an amazing tool. We've got all our clients on it. They love it. It's got workout video demonstrations as well for anyone that gets lost or they want to see their movements ahead of time before they come to class. It's absolutely incredible. Such a powerful tool. And now, as we know, the chairman of TrueCoach is now the owner of CrossFit. So it couldn't be any better. So truecoach.co/MMP and you guys will get a discount. All right, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. Remember, if you want to sign up to Project Strong, you can at any time, themymuscleproject.com/strong. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.